Gibbs, founder of Incandescent Public Relations, publisher of Being Incandescent Business Magazine, and your host for the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. This is Hope Gibbs with the Incandescent Radio Network. We are here today with futurist and author Derek Woodgate, the CEO of the Futures Lab, which is a futures-based consultancy in Atlanta that has 6 satellite offices around the world. The firm specializes in creating future potential for corporations and institutions, especially in the field of entertainment, media, culture, communications, and new communities. Derek spent 9 years as a British diplomat and 13 years as a corporate executive. He is an authority on the application of emerging and immersive technologies and the changing human in the design and production of experimental entertainment with his creation of what he calls sense events. So we're going to talk to Derek about that, and noting that his foresight work is known for developing what is considered a paradigm-shifting approach to future studies. That's demonstrated in his book, Future Frequencies, which was published in 2004, and his work on leveraging dystopian futures, which is all fascinating, high-level stuff. So Derek, who has worked for Philips, Intel, Shell, Fiat, Nokia, and more, is going to give us insights into the future, his future, our future, and we're going to start with asking him, what is the Futures Lab?
Well, good morning, Hope. Great to be talking with you. So the Futures Lab, well, it's an international foresight consultancy, as you mentioned, founded 17 years ago in Belgium, in fact. We originally founded the office in Antwerp in Belgium with a partner office in London. And we moved that to the head office to Austin, Texas in 2000, really in order to better service our increasing number of U.S. clients. And since 2000, the business has gone very global. And that really has accelerated. So we now also have offices and partners in Beijing, in Belo Horizonte, in Brazil, in Tokyo, Paris, Istanbul, Santiago, Mexico City. And over the years, our client list really has covered many of the world's leading companies, some of whom you mentioned, and in a multitude of categories. And in recent years, we've really tended to specialize in emerging media, entertainment, communications, future education, education and sustainable living space. That's where we are today. It's an interesting field, an unusual field. Invariably, I'm asked to explain what a futurist does, but I feel we're in what we call a future potential business, and it really isn't just guessing. It really is based on a comprehensive proprietary 6-stage futures process. So no guessing here. It really is pretty structured.
Yes, we love talking to futurists and learning more about what you do and what you think is coming. Derek and I have worked together a little bit in the past. We have a lot of mutual friends from Social Technologies, which is a firm where I did PR and marketing several years ago. That firm was subsequently sold, but Derek and his colleagues, which are my friends and colleagues, are fascinating in that it's not airy-fairy, crystal ball seeking. It's really a science. So tell us just briefly what a futurist is, and so that people have a context for it.
Well, I mean, there are different types of futurists, perhaps less by process than by what we, who they're working with or what they do. So clearly there are futurists that look at, peak oil or where energy is going to be in 2050. Others are looking at, the political risk in China for the government, and so on and so forth. We at the Futures Lab, we're more involved in working with industry, working with the corporate structures and some institutions, some large institutions. And specifically, we're sort of looking to define, to create future environments, that future landscapes in which we can discover or create really new potential. And that new potential can be anything from new products to new ways to market or new business models, and more often than not, actually creating completely new categories. So categories in which we've no one's really and functioned in the past. And some of those, you know, are extensions of existing categories, and others are completely new categories. So you think about a new category, meaning something like app development, for example, it's a fundamentally new category. And we're going to be seeing that more and more from, you know, a lot of the emerging technologies, particularly nano and nanobio, but also from emerging media. That's really providing us with a completely new set of categories and industries which are coming out. Well, we're seeing them coming out.
So what are some of those new media things that you're tracking?
Well, you know, obviously we're seeing a lot of change within, you know, the trans and cross media areas, but I'd say that it's really this what we call blending, which is bringing together real and you know, the real and the virtual, or different types of media all into one bundle. Obviously, there's a belief that we'll have completely seamless, ubiquitous access to all types of media from various devices on one subject matter in one go. And of course, that allows us to access multiple approaches and multiple perspectives of any given subject matter at any time. So, you know, think of TV, you know, TVs that really are virtually functioning like a present-day computer, which allows you to have multiple access points on the screen at any given time. Particularly when we start to get to what's called super high-definition TV and 90-inch screens, which is probably just a few years away, and at the same time having tracking devices in three dimension, in 3D, right? So we already see 3D TV, and then ultimately holographic TV. When we can move around those worlds and pull out different types of information and actually find out about some of that information, you know, through online sort of sources, hyperlinks, as we're watching a program. So big changes there. And obviously, I mentioned apps earlier, but, you know, we're beginning to see the mobile pretty well as a console for apps, a console for linking us up with all types of media. So a lot happening in that space, and a lot happening in terms of how we access and interface with that media. So a lot of shifts towards immersion, full immersion. That means that we get a better engagement, a better retention of what we're looking at, what we're dealing with. And what I mean by that really is new interfaces, which allow us to really get into different dimensions of the screen or whatever we're dealing with. 3D is obviously part of that. Starting with goggles, it will be without in the very near future. We can resolve some of the ways in which we view it. So, yeah, a lot of different media. I mean, and really, to be fair, we look at the sort of visual side, but a lot's happening in audio as well. The combination of those two, and the combination of being able to bring different media together with communications, by the way, is a fantastic, these are fantastic opportunities for the future.
It's really interesting. And you've worked from top auto companies such as Ford, Nissan, Fiat, Land Rover, Volvo, and consumer product company manufacturers, Nestle, Coke, Kellogg's, Dial, et cetera, so, but you said you focus on the preferred futures, that you create human-centric and the value in terms of advancing society. Can you talk a little bit about what that means, the human-centric version of all of this?
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, and I've just mentioned a whole lot of technologies, and it's really easy when we're in a sort of a new technological era to get focused on, you know, all these exciting technologies out there and what they can do and the applications of them. Part of what we have to do as futurists is to look for what I'd call unusual applications for some of those new technologies. However, at the Futures Lab, one of the critical elements is to make sure that everything we do is human-centric. And what I mean by that is that it places the human at the center of anything we're trying to do in application. That's for the benefit of society as a whole, and, you know, benefit of the human. So it's not technology for technology's sake. And we, you know, that's pretty critical, because you mentioned, you know, car companies, for argument's sake. Well, we could come up with a lot of brilliant ideas on how to sort of improve the actual vehicle. But if in improving the vehicle we make it more dangerous for the driver, that would not be advancing the vehicle overall, or the purpose of the vehicle. So we're very, you know, critical in the way we sort of look and analyze potential for updating a vehicle or parts of the vehicle to ensure that, you know, safety, security, and all those elements. And in some ways, I mean, using it like for what we call upskilling and improving skills of the driver, but in a way that, you know, makes the driver feel very, very safe rather than losing control of the vehicle, control literally of the vehicle, but control over the vehicle, should I say.
Fascinating. So now we're going to switch topics a little bit here. You've done a lot of work on the future of play. What does that mean exactly? What is the future of play, and how will that impact businesses, small and large?
Well, as we look at the future of play, one of my favorite areas at the moment. Well, we've worked on the future of play both in terms of, you know, simulation and visioneering work with clients and through experiential entertainment. And that's, we have a whole new division called FEEL, which is the Future Entertainment and Events Lab that was formerly Plutopia Productions, where we're dealing with that type of thing. But we've also created, you know, we've demonstrated play in its broader sense, because this has become part of, you know, modal aspects of our professional and personal life. But I think that we see play pretty well creeping into everything, you know. Whether it's gamification, that's looking at new ways of looking at education, whether it's in terms of collaborative, interactive innovation spaces for approaches to future learning or simulation techniques of teaching maths and science, or for R&D or incubation and testing new products. You know, play has become, really has become a very significant part of the future. I think you'd say over the past decade, I mean, I've specialized in broad areas of experiential entertainment specifically, right, both for the public and for our clients such as Intel. You mentioned, you know, I call them sense events. That's because there's a particular focus in these, creation of sensation and sensory education, and particularly where we can bring in interactive and immersive worlds to bear on that type of entertainment. But again, play is part of this, and some of it we, you know, has come from you know, games, right? The way we've understood how games function and how games can be a really good learning tool, whether it's serious games or games that can teach us about cultural differences, about values, about societal change. We're seeing gaming itself having a role there. But I also see play being used particularly in simulation, where we can create 3D worlds or virtual worlds in which we can roam around and really discover new things about ourselves, whether it's about how we are changing, you know, in terms of societal change, or whether it's about, you know, approaches to sustainability or new species or anything like that. So we're seeing this whole aspect of gamification, of play, really being part of a lot of things moving forward. It's augmented at the moment by things like converged media, by telepresence, by robotics, by the ability, by sensors and synthetic worlds and things like that, and our ability to transform spaces, right, what we call transformative spaces, to create spaces that are a blend of either real and virtual, or virtual and imagined, you know, and so on and so forth. And this is allowing us to get very, very different perspectives and contexts for the way we look at the, you know, worldviews in the future. I think the other factor around that is that we, particularly the futures lab, have tended to use interactive storytelling or interactive narrative as a framework for the way we use play. And that allows us to develop future scenarios that can, again, have these multiple perspectives to them. We can take them in different directions. I know you've heard me talk in the past about sort of rhizomatic approaches or nomadic thinking approaches to scenario building. And I think that's quite critical. Play allows us to do that. It allows us to sort of move in different directions from any given point to equally select different parts, right, different selections. And you can think, it's a bit like sort of doing multiple what-if storytelling as you move forward. So the way we're looking now at building scenarios, very, very different. Very much more about using interaction, not just for ourselves in the development stage, but also for the client to look at the way these multiple things play out. And of course, you know, all the new technologies for visualization is really allowing us to do far more with that.
So interesting. Now, let's talk a little bit about your new book, Future Flow, which will be published this year. How do you approach this subject of future and flow different from your colleagues?
Well, of course, I hate to be so we're so different, but of course we are. I'll go back to the previous one, to future frequencies, because that was, as you mentioned, considered to be paradigm shifting in its approach to future studies. I think it surprised people as well, because I was very open about disclosing our consulting approach, which surprised a few people. But I think that what was different was that I sort of used a little bit of a post-structuralist writing technique in it, so it sort of went off in different tangents and came back, and you could sort of tap into it and find continuations of it throughout the book. But what it allowed us to do really was to take on paradoxes and issues, such as, you know, things like finding comfort and discomfort or unraveling the unthinkable, in order to create these, you know, what I term hybrid realities. And I speak a lot about the concept of remixed lifestyles and the issues of multiple and future identities and so on and so forth. But I think that's sort of important, because one of the things that tends to happen when, I'm talking about my colleagues, I'm sure they're much more in tune with that, but when you're really talking about the future, it's easy to forget that humans dramatically changing as well, right? We always think of us standing still and the rest of the world moving on. So it's easy to talk about all these new technologies and new legislation and environmental change and so on. But what we forget is that, you know, we're producing all these things are sort of evolving at the same time as the human is evolving. And one would hope they're harmonized, and sometimes they're not. So you get things like VR, you know, in the 90s, where we all believed it was going to be the next big thing and completely failed because humans weren't prepared to put big goggles and hats on their heads, right, to use it, particularly in the home environment. So I think that one of the things that I particularly look at and is sort of this, this approach that really is about playing with sort of those aspects of our lives and society that we don't really like to play with, to look at things that are breaking boundaries, and both in future frequencies and some of the stuff I'm working on in future flow, really is looking at, you know, aspects of progressive culture, how that has an impact on the future, ways in which some of the extreme societal changes are an impact on the future, and so I think that sort of really allows us to deal with future worldviews that really are very distinct and sort of break that paradigm of the unthinkable. I think that's quite critical in the way I look at things. I don't think much is unthinkable. I think that if we put our mind to it, in most cases we can achieve it. Future flow itself, one of the critical aspects of that is that it really is to sort of try and create sort of a future worldview that is really positive and vastly different from the one that tends to frighten so many people today and causes so much anxiety amongst the public. I was inspired to sort of write about this, and a lot of it's already been published in different areas. But I was really inspired to write about it because when I read the Pew Report from 2008, it showed me that for the first time in recent American history, people felt that the future would be worse for their children and grandchildren than it had been for them. In the past, particularly in the U.S., you know, there's an expectation that it would always be better, that we were on this positive, you know, upward curve, and that living standards and life in general would be fundamentally always better for the next generation. Well, what we've seen, of course, is that's not always the case. At the moment, we're beginning to see that that's a real issue, because upward mobility and trickle-down economics have not really worked. And so, you know, we're looking at different ways and different structures in which we can try and, you know, improve that situation so that it's better for the, you know, for the generations that are coming up. And so I think in future flow, whilst really putting a lot of emphasis on humanness and how we're developing, the idea really is to show what the potential and demonstrate the potential from, you know, areas such as sustainable design, transhumanism, the power of neurosciences, nanotech and all the new robot and digital revolution, and the sort of areas like the new understanding of aesthetics and the power of imagination, and how these are really, really shifting and allowing us to really begin to design, you know, a new framework in which we can function. I think that's going to be very, very interesting.
It is interesting, most definitely interesting. So why don't you tell us what the 3 to 5 new emerging issues are that small business owners especially need to be aware of?
Okay, that's a toughie, but I'll have a go at that one. So I think first up, I would say probably more powerful networks, right, including the cloud, with the use of autonomous agents that will provide easier, faster, and more efficient business support. I think one of the critical things for new businesses, small businesses going forward, is going to be the ability to be very adaptive and very fluid, and to be able to use multi-source data inputs and analysis, and finding ways of solution building that really take into account these multiple sources within one analytical program. I think that's going to be very critical. So networks generally, and we're seeing, you know, incredible shifts, continuing incredible shifts in the power of networks. You know, I think last year for the first time we had a phone that had a terabyte on it, and we're seeing obviously with the cloud, you know, great potential to bring in collaborative networks and power them together to generate far more opportunities. And these are open. I mean, the great thing about this, these are open for smaller companies. Yes. Unless we start to see a change in the way that networks are delivered to us by large companies, or that we're charged differently. But currently, they're open to all of us, whether we're small or large. The second thing I would say is probably the opportunities that are afforded by what I call blended collaborative spaces. And that's because they're going to allow much more open source sharing, and they're going to make the employment structure more fluid and adaptive. And this is really important for small business owners, right? There'll be less in-house staff, more networks of specialists and part-timers that can be just called upon as required. And I think that improvements in telepresence systems are going to make online conferences much more effective and cost-efficient, both for B2B and B2C. So I think that whole area of these new, you know, spaces in which small companies can operate, with whom they can sort of network and actually share information, is going to be very critical to move forward. A third area definitely would be better personalized customer data, enabling, you know, highly targeted customized marketing and sales. The data, we've seen this already happening, but the data is going to be automatically collected and analyzed from multiple sources, as I said earlier, but including social networks. So think about how much data there is about us in social networks and the ability to data analyze that. It's going to lead to areas such as experiential interactive marketing. It's going to provide really customized consumer interfaces, which will, you know, particularly with a greater degree of immersion and engagement, allow us to really be hauled in a very strong way. And I'm not saying I particularly agree with this, but I think from a business point of view, it's a critical area, into things that are really about us, right? And, you know, and really, you see it already when the first time you buy something, the next day you have a whole lot of links sent to you saying, well, because you bought this, you might like that. Well, think of this, that's nothing compared to what we're going to have in the next 3 to 5 years, where there's so much data out there and the ability to accumulate and consolidate that data and create very, very, very high profiles on us as consumers is not just going to be stuff you're going to get through your email as we do today, but think of it, for example, as advertising that's going to come up on your TV screen. You know, you're going to be watching a TV series or movies, which can be facilitated by split-screen TVs in the future. And suddenly, up in a box, you're going to be able to purchase products that you see within that program, products that they think that, you know, relate to you, that sort of relate to the program. So, you know, be warned, I'd say. This is the very near future. So, you know, to really put that into perspective, it's definitely about sort of this ability of smaller companies to be very highly targeted in the, and customized in marketing and sales. The fourth one, I suppose, would be around increased mobile trading and cardless payments and subscription models and all the account sort of benefits that we're beginning to get today. You know, as well as what I'd call further increases in the power of peer reviews, right? So this is going to include purchasing products advertised or demonstrated within the TV shows, as I mentioned earlier. I think we're going to see a lot of that happening. That's the fourth one. I think it's just totally different way of trading. Mobiles allowing us to, you know, to scan, and purchase, and pay, and everything else in a very different way. I think the fifth one I would say is probably around new ways of retailing, both on and offline, as well as new business categories. I mentioned earlier that we're going to see new categories driven by emerging technologies, new business models. But, you know, and I think that think about, you know, the degree that the mobile space, how that's changed the way we operate and how we even buy things over the last few years and the opportunities it's fostered. So when I look at things like emerging media and new interfaces and nano and simulation techs and all these new materials and so on and so forth, and augmented reality, I really think we're going to see a very, very different approach to retailing and a lot of new categories opening up. It's going to be both good for smaller businesses to move into and to extend themselves into, but also as customers. One of the other things I'd like to mention around that is this the whole area of next stage avatars called PALs, which are sort of like personal assistants, but they're much more advanced. They're actually learning assistants. They're and I think that they're added to our daily life, which they will be, and that will again change the retailing landscape considerably in the way that we actually trade and do, you know, go about our daily lives, whether it's, you know, literally just buying and trading or leisure or anything else that we want to find out. They won't be really just one of the good things about these PALs. They're not just there to give us information. They're there to help us reflect on what we're looking for and to give us better context for what we're looking for. So rather than it just being like, I'm going to look up, you know, something on the web quickly, it's going to be, you go to your PAL and it's going to give you a way of framing things and give tips on how to look at things. So that's going to be really, really important.
Fascinating stuff. PALs, huh? So we tell us a little bit more before we leave about your speeches. Incandescent Speakers is your speakers bureau that we represent you on, and we're trying to figure out, you know, how to get people really excited about what it is that you speak about. So if you were going to do a 2-minute pitch about your speeches, what would you say?
Oh, 2-minute pitch about my speaking. Well, certainly I've done a lot of it over a long period of time. So I'm very familiar with, you know, all types of speaking environments, and so I've done a lot of international speaking in different languages even, you know, I've been part of sort of more typical whether they're company conferences, annual conferences. You know, I've done Amex, I've done loads of them over the years, Microsoft, but equally, you know, I've done a lot of panel type work as well. And I think that in terms of, they're always future focused, and they're always absolutely cut out. With the exception of when my books have come out, you know, then people have asked me at least to speak about the topics in the books. But in general, they're very, very, they're very customized. It's something I work on weeks ahead of the actual event, and to make sure they're completely targeted to the audience with which I'm working. I don't have some sort of pat speak, but I do like to put them within the framework of those areas in which, you know, obviously have expertise and speciality. And so of late, certainly a lot of that has been around some of the things we've been talking about today, such as, in sort of the new media, the emerging media areas, and how they're going to impact both the future, but also the future of business and the ways in which they can be exploited and used in the future to improve ways to market, new business models, and businesses overall. I think the other areas that I have sort of really looked at in a lot of detail of late have been around future economic development, sustainable development, particularly as opposed to urban development and new urban approaches, so new approaches to urban development, or redesigning the future, as I talked about it earlier, in the way in which we live. And I think that finally, so another area that I've done a lot on recently has been around how the human's changing, right? So how are we changing? How are we likely to adapt to these new futures? What sort of worldviews are we likely to have? How do we deal with multiple identities? What are some of the shifts in the way we as humans are changing, you know, relative to a lot of these new developments, these new environments and societies in which we're operating, which we're living on a daily database. And this, you know, this area of remix societies, remix lifestyles, right? The fact that they're not these very set ways of living anymore, that we are very adapted, very fluid in our approaches to how we want to live and how we do live. So, you know, a lot of areas, but they tend to, you know, they're always very human focused and they're always very business focused.
That's excellent, and we look forward to having lots of people have the opportunity to listen to Derek Wibgate speak, talk about the future, and what he's doing at the Futures Lab, which is really innovative and exciting. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today, Derek.
My pleasure. Very much enjoyed it, and thank you for inviting me to.
Absolutely, and we'll have you back on for sure in the future talking about some of these very specific issues that you're talking about. The future of humans sounds really interesting. So this is the Incandescent Radio Network. I'm Hope Gibbs, the founder and producer. We will talk to you very soon. Here's to your incandescent success. So that's it for today's Incandescent Entrepreneur Show, where we always ask, what's your story? If you have a good one and would like to be interviewed on the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show, send me an email to hope@hopegibbs.com. Check back every Monday at noon for a new episode of the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, www.incandescentradio.com. We look forward to talking to you next week. Here's to your incredible, indelible success.